Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Welcome, everybody. It's Bob, Dave, and Moore here on 710 ESPN Seattle, Thursday edition of the program. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, Bob Condotta of the Seattle Times will join us, talk some Seahawks football with him. We've got the professor, John Clayton, at 4 o'clock, as we do every day, and then Paul Moyer will make his appearance today at 5 o'clock. Looking forward to that conversation. Dave, good to see you. Jim, how are you?
Doing fine, Bob. How are you?
Yeah, what'd you do with your time, Jim?
I played golf, 36 holes. Yeah, I played over at Gold Mountain, the Olympic course, and then followed it up with an afternoon round at McCormick Woods with my kids and a couple of buddies. And, yeah, it was a good time.
How'd you do?
Fantastic.
I did great one round. I did terrible the other. A 76, Bob, at Gold Mountain. I was really proud of myself on that one. It was really fun to shoot in the 70s. I hadn't been there in a long time. But then I followed it up with a 95 at McCormick Woods.
95?
So it was back to normal.
You shouldn't be shooting a 95 as much as you golf. Come on, man.
Yeah, well, it's a hard game, and I'm not all that skilled at it.
It is a hard game. I'll agree with you that. I don't know what your skill level is. I've never seen you golf. But
do you play, Bob?
No, not.
So. Yeah, I don't have.
I don't have the temperament.
I don't either.
I get too angry.
The one thing is, I guess you're not supposed to choke the living daylights out of the club. I looked down. I got a lesson
your hands
one time.
Are white.
Yeah, and like, you see how your fingernails are white like that? Yeah, I see. Yeah, that's no good.
Yeah, don't do that.
Don't do that.
Yeah, I like to beat up my golf bag with a club. Every once in a great while. So, like I said, I like to just take a dozen balls and chuck them straight into the woods and cut to the chase. Just get rid of it right away.
Yeah, it's a hard game.
Yeah, very frustrating really game. Very frustrating game. Well, welcome back, Jim. Good to have you back.
Oh, thanks. And then, yeah, it was nice having a one-day break, but good to be back. And then, Dave, you're taking off a few days, starting tomorrow?
Yeah, I sure am.
Jim, have we gotten confirmation? Are you going to be in the building?
I'm currently trying to find that out.
Okay.
Jim, do you want to come in the building?
Yes, I do.
Really?
I want to be there with Bob. I want to see. Yeah, I want to see everybody.
Bob's very demanding. He needs lots of attention. He needs lots of care.
I need eye contact at all times. Yeah. Talk to me, Dave. Look at me. Look at me.
Jim's going
to
be fired up.
He will.
Coming in here because you get, you know, just a little bit of juice just being around people.
Well, it makes communication easier. It certainly does that. And hopefully Jim will be in the building. Dave will be enjoying some sunny weather, and we'll carry on. Meanwhile, getting into the Russell Wilson MVP conversation, how much credit should Pete get for that? How much credit do we give Pete for, I guess, maybe relaxing what is his tradition with the offense? Just we'll run first, and that's it, and that's all. That's our identity. And sort of allowing, we even heard that cut. We played it the other day of him talking about at halftime. He said, I want Russ involved in all of this, or however he phrased it. Seems like he's I'm not going to say he's turned over the controls of the offense to him by any stretch, but he's certainly incorporated him more and maybe more of his ideas and allowed him to show what he can truly do.
I guess. You know, I mean, look, I think he's thinking, this is my best player, right? And you want the offense to flow through him. So to me, it's no more than that right now. But there's always time for change, and maybe we'll work this in later. But we're talking. I was on Tom, Jake, and Stacy today, and we talked about. I referenced the Kansas City Chiefs last year, mm-hmm. and we'll throw some numbers out there. But I think at 5:30. But you know, whether or not this defense can get better, can it evolve? And you know, it was kind of interesting because Kansas City sort of did last year defensively during the bye week. So, and it's not like the bye week is just this amazing thing that happens.
Magical.
You know, magical that all of a sudden you're going to, you know, change things around. But don't you think that he still wants to get the running game going? I mean, it's going to, that's part of it. That's part of you can't just go, hey, we're doing great. Let's just keep doing what we're doing. But I do believe in having the ball in the hands of your best player, and that's what Russell Wilson is right now. I mean, I think, you know, it was a little bit more debatable as to whether, like, when Chris Carson really had it going, he was pretty spectacular. You know, in some of those games, 18 and 19, where, you know, that may have been pretty close. But now it's kind of like with him and DK, and let's not count Lockett out. I mean, he's had a couple of weeks that were, you know, low targets and not a lot of catches, but that guy's still incredible. And I think he's going to have like one of those breakout games here in the next two where you go, oh, yeah, that's right, Tyler Lockett's the number one receiver.
Jim, wouldn't you say Lockett is still the security blanket when it's third and six and the game's on the line? And I know in this last game they went on fourth down to DK, but typically if you're going to average it out and you're going to look at who do they feel most comfortable with, who do you feel most comfortable with in knowing they're going to throw the ball to, for me at this point, it may be DK eventually. I'm just more certain about Tyler. He just seems to be that Doug Baldwin guy, that guy that will catch the ball. I know he had a drop, but we all talked about how rare that was. Isn't he still the security blanket?
Yeah, well, you'd think so, but when you look at the last two games, and of course we're just working with smaller sample sizes here because we're just five games in, but the first three games he averaged eight catches and 87 yards a game or something like that, and then the last two he's clearly been, Russell has, been going to Metcalf, and you know, moving the chains type guy, yeah, I suppose you'd say Tyler Lockett, and when you want to hit the home run, you think DK Metcalf. I saw something today, too, where NFL.com, I think it was Nick Shook, said that DK is the best deep threat receiver in the league already. And so he's getting all of this national attention. I know we're going to be talking about this later, but have you guys put yourself in the shoes of Tyler Lockett at all and wonder what he's thinking? I have, and it's not like I stay awake at night all night thinking about it, but there have been times where I thought, man, I think Lockett's probably happy for DK Metcalf and what's going on and the greater good for the team and the offense. And boy, they're just gangbusters. They're going crazy, explosive offensively. But I just wonder, and do you think Lockett's the type of personality where he would care about that kind of thing, that he's good with all of it? Or do you think that there's a little bit of ego involved there with him too?
Well, I think everybody has an ego in the NFL. I mean, otherwise you wouldn't be there, but I really don't think so. I mean, I think he cares about winning. And I think he's probably thinking about any, you know, pass that he dropped or thinking that's on me. That's just the read I've gotten from him. I don't think he cares one bit.
Who did we have? Was it David Moore that we talked to? Or I can't remember. It might have been David Moore. And they were talking about the room and how nobody cares, that there was no ego. And that, to an extent, yeah, certainly there's ego. But that nobody is worried about, you know, how many targets do I have? How many targets does he have? How come you're going to him? And just really explain that's what made it unique, is that nobody's worried about that.
Right.
And that includes DK and Tyler, obviously.
Remember he had the quote during camp where he's like, it's like you're sitting around at the table. There's enough food to go around for everybody. I don't think that did not come off as some empty, you know, thing that just gets said to me. That was really how he felt. So yeah, I think probably if anything, he's, you know, thinking, hey, I got to do better, you know, which he's still a really good player. It's not like he's, you know, failing out there or anything, but I would think anything for him would be, he would put it on himself.
Yeah, I just think it's a great room. I think that wide receiver room, I think the locker room's great. Everybody's, there isn't the big voice, right? There isn't the one guy who's sort of sucking all of the oxygen out of the room. Everybody just seems to be on the same plane at this point, and Russ is the leader, and Bobby's probably the leader on the defensive side of things, but ultimately, I just feel like the ego is in check, especially with the receivers, and that's rare for that position group, as we've learned over the years, just looking at every other situation. So I think they're in good shape there. Mark Sanchez was on with Colin Cowherd, and they were talking about Russell Wilson, and asked what the secret sauce to Russ's clutch performances are.
You haven't had the stroke today. You haven't had the...
Yep.
Now's the biggest drive, and you're great. What do you think that secret sauce is with Russell? Because he does this a lot.
Pete Carroll. I guarantee you. So Russ has that innate ability. Don't get me wrong. That's Russ.
I'm not sure what that music was.
I was wondering what that was too.
It was very calming. Felt like you were in a spa.
Like you're getting. I was getting ready to get a massage or something. Maybe.
Yeah, it was very relaxing. But so he said it's Pete Carroll. And then he went on to say Shoddy is putting Russ in good positions.
A lot of this is Coach Schottenheimer putting him in good positions. It's a lot of the same. I'm texting Shoddy the other day when they're playing against the Miami Dolphins. And I said, did I just see you run Act 4 Cobra Dancer, like the second, third play of the game after you got the interception up the sideline to DK Metcalf? And he goes, it was actually Hinge, but it converted versus Cloud. So same play. Yeah, Dancer. I'm like, dude, you guys are running the same stuff. It's not like something crazy, but Shoddy has understood, and credit to him, that when he gives Russ a play, that's not necessarily what's going to happen. That's just like an essay prompt. Russ is going to take this thing wherever he wants. And they trust him to do that because he's been in these situations now before with Coach Carroll, understanding rule number one, the ball is most important.
The heck was that play call?
Act four, Cobra, Dancer.
He says, no, actually, it's a hinge, but then it turned into Dancer.
Versus Cloud.
Versus Cloud, yeah. Did that make any sense to you?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, but the only thing was Cloud. I mean, to me, that was our who had force or who was the outside player.
Okay.
Cloud for corner.
I like how he just spit it out like Cowherd would know exactly what he was talking about. He was like, oh, dude, did you just run Act 4, Cobra Dancer? I mean, yeah. No, actually, it was Hinge with Cloud, and then we went to Dancer. Like, I picture Cowherd there going, uh-huh, uh-huh.
Yeah. Oh, the Act 4 Cobra Dancer. Yeah, I remember. With the Hinge conversion if Cloud shows up.
But him giving credit to Shoddy and Pete, but also allowing for the idea that, well, Russell's going to customize this, so to speak. He's going to do what he wants, essentially, within those parameters.
I like the way you put that about an essay prompt, because that's you give him the play and then you let him freelance a little bit or go with it and improvise if need be. But Sanchez would know Brian Schottenheimer. He worked with him when Sanchez was there with the Jets 2009-13. Schottenheimer was there for those years, or at least three of them anyway. And so, yeah, it's all working. It's all working really well. And it's kind of funny because I haven't heard any criticism of Brian Schottenheimer. I think since he first came in those first two games on the road, where he went to Russell Wilson too much, and they got back to the running game. But it seemed like there was always
Cowboys playoff game.
The playoff Cowboy game.
Yeah. Oh, the Cowboys game, yeah, when they should have, you know, they kept trying to run into a brick wall there, and they should have improvised. But still, all in all, you don't hear criticism of Brian Schottenheimer, nor should you, because look at this offense and what they're doing. And he's like the anti-Darrell Bevell right now.
Listen, take it easy on Bevell.
Okay? See, I'm with you.
I never had a problem with Bevell either, but everybody else seemed to.
Well, I get it on the heels of the Super Bowl and how it ended. I totally understand. But by the way, Pete had full say-so on that play and could have nixed it immediately. Tom Cable was the assistant head coach. They're all on the headsets when that play call is made.
They're all complicit.
They're all complicit, Dave. They are all complicit. But again, we talked about it, that they were, what, 8 of the 10 years or whatever, they were in the top 10. In one of those years, they were 11th in offense, and everybody acted like Bevell was some caveman who just said, take ball, run into the wall. You know, it was a little overstated. Anyway, Shoddy's done a great job. And I was telling Dave, Jim, before the show, I was watching Inside the NFL last night, and they've got players mic'd up, and they went to the Seahawks game. And, you know, that first half was just dreadful, right? And nothing was going right, and they had Russell mic'd up, and he's sitting on the bench, and Geno Smith is next to him, and I think it was Shoddy. It was somebody with a mask. It was hard to tell, but I think Shoddy was sitting next to him, and Russell's just speaking like, here's what's going to go on. It's not, here's what we should do. He goes, okay, we're going to go up tempo. We're going to mix up the tempo. Then it's going to be 13-7, and then we're going to do, I mean, it was like he was reading a book, like, here's what I read, guys. Here's what's going to go on. It was really interesting, but you saw the amount of sort of control that he had, and on top of it, the confidence that he had. Like, all right, yep, this is not good, but here's what's going to go on. We're going to do this. We're going to mix up the tempo. We're going to score. It's going to be 13-7. And he was just saying
and
it as a matter of
like
fact.
Deadpan.
Deadpan.
It,
wasn't
right?
wasn't yelling. They were sitting on the bench. They were just sitting there talking.
Well, Pete talked about
Shoddy's
that.
Shoddy's up in the booth now. But
yeah. So okay. So who? Him, yeah. Still, I'm wondering who. There was somebody.
I thought maybe he was on the headphones, maybe talking to Shoddy, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. I mean, that's who he is, and you just see like the calm look on his face. There's no let's freak out, you know. And that's why people will say, man, I want to see more emotion out of people on the sidelines, and I'm like, no, you don't. Actually, you want to see calm is what you want.
And he did show some emotion where he was kind of walking up and down the sideline talking to the guys on the bench going, we got this, here we go, here we go, you know. He's like, he's that cheerleader mode or whatever, but he's not yelling and screaming or freaking out by or pouting or any of that nonsense. I mean, he was dialed in. It was interesting.
Yeah, well, Pete talked earlier this week, I think it was to Danny and Paul, about the championship poise that this team has. And, Dave, you mentioned the calmness that the Seahawks have. They've been in every situation possible, so they know how to extricate themselves from bad situations like they were in the other night. And Pete was talking about that calmness and how it allows you to function well and always believing that you're going to get the job done because you've had validation before. You know you can get it done because you've done it so many times. So, boy, that was one where I was really surprised that they pulled it off, and I shouldn't have been with Russell Wilson. At the
well, and the other part where he was mic'd up was right before that last drive. He's like, they know what's going to happen. They know what's going to happen. You know, basically talking about the fight, like, we're going to score. You know, and they started, what, it was a 94-yard drive, I think? 96-yard.
Did everyone still know what was going to happen on 4th and 10 and 4th and goal?
I don't know. I think they were hoping. But, yeah, it was just interesting. He's like, they know what's coming. They know what's going to happen. It was very cool. But here's a little bit more from Mark Sanchez talking about Russell has adapted himself to be a lot like Pete Carroll.
He's really molded and adapted himself to be a lot like Pete Carroll, and he had a lot of those qualities anyway. Coach Carroll harped on us that you can't win the game in the first three quarters. You can win it in overtime and in the fourth quarter. That's it. So I don't care what happens before that. We can win this game, and we will win this game, or we're just going to run out of time. So you never lose, right? That's Pete's mentality. And he has this incredible ability to convince you of that. And now Russell is just living out that conviction.
All right, what is that music?
It's a music box that's open.
Is it? Somebody is it like a thing in a crib? What do they call that? A mobile or whatever that spins?
That could be. Yeah.
Is he babysitting?
Like
what's going on?
Jewelry box that you open up and
good,
it plays
Bob.
Music. Yeah.
It's very distracting.
Well, said that before. I think after the San Francisco overtime win last year on Monday Night Football, where Pete and Russ were like grabbing each other and smiling. That was one of my favorite scenes. They've become one, those two. They've become each other. And, you know, I feel like that relationship is really good. And it's a much healthier one than Sean McVay and Jared Goff have, where it's like you're
puppet
actually
puppet master.
His brain, you know. But, yeah, they're just – they have that attitude. They will it. And so remember in the beginning, everybody was saying, oh, pizza rah-rah guy, this is college stuff, you know. No, it's working, man. And
it's been working for a decade.
And he's got a guy who – is unflappable. Never, you know, you're never going to see Russ hanging his head, ever. So I remember the story after the 2012 season where they lost in Atlanta, and how I can't remember who was telling me that Russell Wilson was like, he had like maybe 30 minutes of mourning, and then like walking out to the bus, he was talking to somebody, and whether it was a coach or a teammate, about what we're going to do next year.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that?
Yep.
And that's just who he is, and it's not phony. It's there all the time, and that's the case for both of them. So I think a lot of it, too, is Schottenheimer is, you know, he's really good. I mean, look, he did it with Mark Sanchez. You know, he was able to get them to the AFC championship.
Tells you how good he is.
Yeah. I mean, they had a killer running game and a really good defense, much like, the Seahawks in 2013. But, you know, he was able to coach him up. But, you know, I remember coming into the season talking about, you know, year three for Shoddy with Russ. You know, you're right, Jim. Well, other than the Dallas game, those first two were like, okay.
It's like seven carries one game, six the other, something crazy like that. Yeah.
Yeah. He was like, oh, I got Russell Wilson. I'm going to throw the ball. And it just didn't work out. But, you know, now, and the thing was his assignment coming in here was like, I'm going to work on Russ on everything from like the three-step drop to the five-step drop, that they're going to just – they will almost become one. And so that's been really cool. Russ is the other thing, and just bring it up, for allowing Russ to be able to do this. Now, I'll say this because he said something about getting lots of time, but that first touchdown throw that Russ had against the Patriots to Tyler Lockett, where he gets out of the pocket, dives back up in the pocket, throws across his body. I mean, he's making a lot of those. There's still a lot of improvisation, but you know, you look at his average, he's third in the NFL. Well, he's tied for second as far as average per attempt, 8.9 yards, only behind Jared Goff.
Yeah, is that hard for you to say, Dave?
Yeah, I
came out a little slower.
Like, I was gonna say he's just second. Okay. Who's first doesn't really matter. Look, I'll say this. Goff throws a great deep ball. He really does.
Yeah.
So, and
he's
so
a good quarterback. You got to admit, he's a good quarterback.
Yeah, now, as long as there's somebody telling him what to do, it's fine.
Dave couldn't just leave it at he's a good quarterback as long as he's got somebody telling him what to do. The puppet master pulling the strings. I want to play one more from Mark before we get to take two. Because I want to hear the music in the background. But more importantly, here he is telling a story about Pete Carroll's takeaway from hearing Rick Barry say the shots even out in the end.
He went and saw Rick Barry speak, and Pete ran up to him and was grabbing on him at the end of the talk. And he says, you know, how do you come back when you have a bad start? Well, I don't know. I'm a 30 or 40 whatever percent shooter. So if I miss my first 10 shots, you better look out because the numbers even out, and then I'll be on fire. Mm-hmm. So Pete took that internalized that, inculcated that, and now he's teaching that to his players. He preached that to us, that no matter what, something good is around the corner. Quarterback, you throw an interception, something good is right around the corner if you're tough enough to hang in there and let it play out the right way. So that's what we're seeing from Russ.
The music is like a Lifetime movie or something. I don't, it's so weird.
What's the word, inculcated?
I have no idea.
I'm not sure what that is. I like Mark Sanchez.
Yeah.
Remember seeing him on Hard Knocks?
Uh-huh.
Remember? Do you remember the Shake Weight?
Oh, yes. Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
anyway, I won't go into it, but
yeah, picture the motion.
You know. I like him. Yeah. I like that kid.
So he's a good buddy of our pal Adam Ray.
Is he?
Yeah, they were doing some stuff together. Yeah, good buddies.
Yeah, I think he does a really good job. But Russ has got it going. I was going to make a point, and now I can't remember it.
Well, think about it. We're going to take two.
It's time to take two. Brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at 5.
Take two.
The Astros defeated the Rays 4-3 yesterday to stay alive in the ALCS. Game 5 is underway right now.
Yay! What are you clapping for the Rays, the Astros for? What's the matter with you, man?
I'm just trying to get under your skin.
It's working. And they're up 3-1 right now.
Are they?
Yes.
I saw Zunino struck out. Or no, wait, he didn't strike out. He flew out to the warning track. Almost hit a grand slam. Bases loaded. Zunino with two outs and got it to the warning track. But
I thought they were going to pull it off last night. They started to make a little bit of a comeback. They came within a run. They had runners on. I'm like, okay, they're going to pull this thing out. And they didn't. So, all right, let the Astros build up some level of hope and then rip their heart out. Rip their heart out. Because they're going to have to go. I mean, they got to. Obviously, they're trailing 3-1. Three games left to get something done.
It couldn't be any better if something like that would have happened. What you just described, Jim, is that, you know, maybe it's the final game of the game that puts him over the top, and Zunino hits just a towering home run like he's prone to do every once in a while.
In college football news, Saturday's game between Florida and LSU has been postponed after Florida had a surge in positive COVID-19 tests this week. Meanwhile, at Alabama, head coach Nick Saban and athletic director Greg Byrne have tested positive for COVID-19 as well.
Yeah, that's not good news. We heard that this morning. What was it, like 19 or 21 players or something? I mean, just a boatload of players testing positive. And then Nick Saban, who's 68 years old, testing positive. Last I heard, he's asymptomatic at this point. So, you know, fingers crossed for him and Greg Byrne as well. But, yeah, certainly not good news. And hopefully they can contain it, and it's not something that is being spread about.
I wonder if he's going to be able to, like, communicate with his coaches or something.
I read that he was doing it during practice. He would basically be on the phone watching and say, run that play again, so-and-so screwed it up. Run it again.
Yeah, Steve Sarkisian, I think, is going to be the coach on the sideline, though, from what I read. And I got a kick out of it because the Florida coach all week, Dan Mullen, was talking about, let's bring everybody back. Let's fill the stadium. I want to see all the Gator fans there. He backtracked a little bit yesterday, but that game, yeah, it's postponed this week. So, boy, it's just such a topsy-turvy world living the way we do with COVID-19 now.
Yeah. All right, coming up, Bob Condotta of the Seattle Times will join us. He wrote a piece ranking Russell Wilson's fourth quarter comebacks. We'll see where last Sunday's thriller ranks. That's coming up with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
A reminder, you can listen to our show via the 710 Sports app. Download it for free. Take us out in the sunshine. Listen to the show. You can listen to the podcast, watch it live, text, all that cool stuff, and you do it for free. So if you don't have the app, go ahead and download that. Right now we get a chance to speak to a man who does a great job covering the Seahawks for the Seattle Times. He is here with us. The one, the only Bob Condotta is here. Hello, Bob.
How are you guys doing today?
Doing good, man. Doing good. You had an interesting piece here, your latest piece in the Seattle Times, where you are ranking the top 12 fourth quarter comebacks in the history of Russell Wilson's career. And I think Dave said he's got 34 fourth quarter and overtime comeback. So you had to sift through 34 and come up with the top 12. Before we get into the specifics, how tough was it to narrow it down to these 12?
It was a little tough. They include ties in there. I got some questions from some people because Pro Football Reference has a different number. And, the Seahawks include games that are tied as well. So they're not all comebacks necessarily, but they're all games where it's a game-winning drive. There's a few in there that were pretty forgettable games, I guess, games where, they just weren't playing well and they finally kind of pulled it out or whatever. But certainly to really rank the ones at the top, that's pretty hard because there really are a lot of memorable ones. And there's a few games like the Houston game in 2013 where, you could pick at it and say Russell didn't necessarily do a whole lot. Sherman had the interception and there's some things like that. But that was such an amazing game and such a huge comeback that, you sort of feel like games like that have to be included on there. But it was kind of a fun exercise to just go through all those. And the Seahawks PR staff, thankfully has them all listed there in their media guide. So you sort of just look at that and then just kind of start. I just sat down on Sunday night after the game a little bit and started going through them.
Yeah, how do you come up with this stuff, Bob? Every week you got something like this that's interesting. The only thing I would say, though, you have the Fail Mary ahead of, or is that the one that the NFC Championship?
Number two, I think.
Okay, yeah, you have it number two. I really liked, you make a good point about the one, with Houston, because, Russ didn't do a lot. But the one I thought, too, was very significant. And maybe you can reflect on this. The number five or the overtime win in Chicago. I felt like the thing that was so significant about this, and I don't know what your memories are, but that's when the team and the veterans accepted Russell Wilson. I feel like that was kind of like his coming out party where he was going to be a leader and everybody, all of the vets finally embraced him in that after that game.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I actually didn't. That was Russell's rookie year, and I didn't cover the team that season. But I have a distinct memory of watching that game, and how that was. He leads the comeback, and then if you remember, there was a 56-yard pass to Brandon Marshall, who got behind. I think he got behind Sherman, so allowed Chicago to quickly get down there and kick a field goal to force overtime after it looked like the Seahawks were going to win it, and then so Russell has to lead a whole other drive down the field. And you're exactly right about that. I remember the following year, I think, when the Super Bowl came around, and it was sort of a national talking point. People remembered the New England game, and people would ask about that. And you'd always hear Pete and players kind of say that was significant. But the big one for Russell was that one in Chicago because it was on the road. They had lost in Miami the week before to fall to 6-5. And you can go back and read what people were writing about the team at that time. And it was, pretty dire. And Browner had been suspended for Peds and stuff like that. There was a lot of chaos going on, it seemed like, with the team. And to go to Chicago, and the Bears were 8-3. That was a good Bears team. And to go there and win that game and basically have to win it twice, you're exactly right. I that's everything I've ever heard is, on the plane ride home, everybody was like, this kid's legit.
Bob, do you think we're going to continue to see Russell just cut it loose the way he has through five games here? I always sense that there's a little reluctance on Pete Carroll's part, and I say little, very little, because it's been so successful. But he talked a little bit about, boy, we need to be able to run the ball later in the season and cold weather conditions, that type of thing. What do you think we're going to see the rest of the way?
Yeah, well, I think that's part of – I think some of that is Pete just sort of laying that foundation, like, don't be asking us a bunch of questions later if there's a game where, Chris Carson's running 28 times, because I warned you ahead of time we might have to do this at some point, and that's why we're doing it kind of thing. That is still just, I mean, Pete is 69 years old and has coached for 40-something years now, and I think he does have a built-in philosophy that he does feel like, that's what you're going to have to do at some point. There's going to be a game. The passing game is not going to be clicking. Maybe there's edge rushers you can't block or whatever, and you're going to have to win a game a different way. And I think he wants to feel like, the Seahawks are always built to do that and are going to be able to do that. And, so I think he also just, maybe he's just looking at the numbers a little bit. And Russell still, he only in air quotes, but he only threw three touchdown passes in the last game, sort of dropped down to 19 for the season. But that's still, I think that it's on a pace to be 10 more than anybody in the NFL has ever thrown for. Pete probably is looking at that a little bit pragmatically and just being like, we're not going to be able to keep doing that. And maybe they can, maybe with the way DK Metcalf is playing and the way the offensive line, I think, is a lot better maybe than people thought it was. And some things like that, maybe they really can keep doing that. But I think some of it is Pete just looking at it and being kind of realistic and going, we're getting into November and December, and we're maybe not going to be able to throw five touchdown passes every game.
Bob, on your list, you've got number three being the game that just took place between the Vikings and the Seahawks, and that 94-yard drive with, you know, under 2 minutes to go. It was spectacular, and I think what makes it even more spectacular is it doesn't feel likely based on how they'd been playing outside of the little stretch in the third quarter. It was just one of those games where you're just like, all right, it's not their night. Yet he found a way. At this point, are you surprised if he doesn't come up with a win and he's got a, you know, at least a decent amount of time to get something done? I mean, it's almost like Tyler Lockett. If he doesn't catch a ball that hits his hands, you're kind of surprised because he just always catches the ball. And I feel that way about Russell. Like, yeah, everything's been going wrong. It's sideways. They're trailing. It seems unlikely, but he's got enough time and he's got the ball in his hands. So you just sort of have come to expect it.
Yeah, I totally thought he was going to do it. The minute they didn't get the fourth down, I actually thought to myself, I need to write a new lead here. The minute Minnesota didn't get that, because being a late-night game, it was an on-deadline. I had to have something ready to go the minute the game ended. And that was exactly what went through my mind was, they're going to win this game, so I better start writing a few paragraphs here assuming they won this. But, yeah, you know, he just I don't know that he could play better right now than he is. And granted, he had the bad pass or – We were able to ask Russell about that and sort of the chaos after the game there about what exactly happened on that play, although it's probably self-explanatory that Carson sort of just got pushed out of bounds. But, you know, other than maybe a couple other passes he would have liked to have had back in that game. But, you know, in general, he's playing at such a high level and he always seems to play at his highest level when it really matters in situations like that. So you definitely expect it. And, you know, you go back through that drive and the first play where he runs it and kind of gets him out of danger there was a really good play that I think he can kind of overlook, looking, you know, remembering the passes and stuff like that instead. But, you know, the minute that happened, I kind of just thought, you know, they're already out of danger or, you know, they're out of their back end, not out of danger, but they're out of their back end a little bit at least. They've sort of got some momentum going already. You know, maybe you got Minnesota thinking already like this is not going to end well for us, and it just sort of seemed, you know, even though 4th and 10 and all that, it sort of felt inevitable to me a little bit.
Hey Bob, just real quick, we're up against the break, I know, but there's been lots of questions of sustainability. You know, can the defense can they continue to win with the defense this way? Can they continue to, you know, rely on Russell for with these huge numbers in the offense? But what do you think?
Well, yeah, I don't know that the specific way they're winning is sustainable. I do think winning is, you know, and they're not going to go undefeated. I mean, I don't think they're going to go 16-0. So I don't think they're going to win every single week and do it the way they're doing it. I think they think the defense will get better to get everybody healthy, especially, you know, I don't know that we've seen, you know, people were thinking this could be the best corner, one of the best secondaries in the NFL. We really haven't seen all four guys playing kind of well and healthy together for any kind of sustained period. And I think that's one of the things they're really banking on is maybe get after the bye, Dunbar gets healthy, Jamal Adams gets healthy. You get those guys playing together for a little while, and that really helps everything with the defense a lot better. And then maybe you can win games in a little bit more of a conventional fashion.
Bob, we appreciate it. As always, great stuff, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thanks a lot, you guys.
There you go, Bob Condotta. The Seattle Times does a great job covering the Seahawks. Coming up, our very own Brandon Son of Augustafson has handed out progress reports for the Seahawks rookies. We'll break those down, see if we agree or not. That's coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and More.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
We got the professor, John Clayton, joining us at the top of the hour, talking some football with him. Meanwhile, our buddy here, Brandon Son of Augustafson, as Dave has deemed him, has come out with a progress report for the Seahawks rookies this year. He did this last year. He gave each rookie a grade.
And you know what he got last year?
What do you get?
Wrong, Son of Augustafson.
Not on every pick.
Well, let's just go down his list. So he goes first-round pick, Jordan Brooks. Then he gives a write-up. We won't go through all of that, but just talks about here's the stats. One tackle on 29 defensive snaps and 28 special team snaps. Gives a little more write-up, and then ultimately the grade he gives him, a C. That's probably a little bit higher than I would give him, just based on the fact he just hasn't been there. And when he has been there, he hasn't really popped yet.
Well, do you give him an incomplete or a D then?
I'd give him an incomplete because it just he hasn't been out there enough, in my opinion, to really say, yeah, he's been bad or, oh, he's been – I mean, if he played 28 snaps and, you know, had three sacks or something, that's different. But I just, I don't know what you could really expect in that short amount of time from him.
Yeah, well, and I think what's going to happen is, unfortunately, Patrick Queen is going to follow him around at least for a number of years here, because that's who the Seahawks passed on. And he's, you know, having, and this is a smaller guy. He's 6 feet, 229, I think, maybe a little bit smaller. But anyway, that guy's got a couple of sacks. He's got tackles for loss. He's 2 forced fumbles. I mean, he's all over the place. So, you know, he's going to get compared to him. He actually scored a touchdown. Holy smokes. I mean, this kid, Patrick Queen. And so, yeah, for him, I would say I'm going to give higher grades, and the reason why is because I don't expect anything out of rookies. I just think it's a bonus if you get something out of him. So you gave him a C.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll give him I'll give him a C. I think it's just kind of middle. I don't think that there's been enough to figure it out, and for that reason, probably is why, you know, you give him a C. Like, he, you know, make some plays out there, and you just. He just hasn't yet, but everybody goes at a different pace.
That's been a tough one for him. But, you know, when you're a first rounder, whether you're early in the first round or late in the first round, I think people have higher expectations. But he's had the sprained knee that he's dealing with. He's, as you mentioned, I think only one tackle so far. So he hasn't had any opportunities. A lot of guys playing ahead of him that have been pretty good in the league. And Dave, Brandon asked the question in his story, so I'll ask you. Do you think that Brooks will take over against Arizona at the weak side linebacker spot for Cody Barton?
Yeah, we'll see if the people who have been texting into the show are actually Seahawk coaches. And if that's the case, then it doesn't look good for Cody Barton.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, look, it's going to be like, you know, you just said, Bob, or referenced the fact that we're going to have to see what happens in practice.
Yeah.
And how he's able to come back from that. And then again, everybody reacts differently. You know, what we got with Rashad Penny last year.
Yep.
You know, I mean, and I know it was just a finger, and I don't think it was a toughness issue. It was just a matter of missing time.
The next one up, Daryl Taylor. This one's easy. Incomplete.
Incomplete.
You haven't seen a moment yet, so hopefully we'll see something. Damian Lewis. I was curious on this one because as the resident O-line critic in the building, I've been very pleased with the O-line. And Damian Lewis, yeah, he's had some penalties, but I can live with those. When you provide the protection this line has, and I think he in particular has done a great job as a rookie there, and he gives him an A-. I don't disagree with that at all.
Yeah,
I think he's been really good.
And without the penalties, probably an A.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's had your typical, but that's what you expect. But I think he's got 4. Maybe 5, but anyway, it's
I can live with him
in 5 games. Yeah, that's the cost of doing business with a rookie,
because Ifedi would give you penalties and subpar play, in my opinion.
Yeah,
he's giving you penalties and I think really good play,
right? Yeah. I agree with, yeah, I hate this.
No, you agree.
I want to tell Son of Augustifson he's wrong, but he's right so far.
Yeah, so far so good, especially with Lewis. I mean, drafting him right away and then in the third round, and from the very get-go, you thought, okay, the Seahawks have him penciled in at right guard, and sure enough, he's done well so far.
Yeah. Next up on the list, tight end Colby Parkinson. Again, incomplete. So that's pretty easy. You agree with him again.
Yes.
Dang it. Ah, dang it. You give him a B.
Well, he's a Stanford guy, so maybe I'll, I'll give him a little slack.
All right, here, maybe you'll disagree here. DJ Dallas, 4th-round pick. We were just talking about him during the break, and I was telling Dave, Jim, that I was surprised we didn't see more of him in last week's game based on, and I know it was only 2 carries and 2 catches in the previous game, but we did see, you saw a little spark into the way he ran with the ball, and you thought, oh, goodness, man, I'd like to see what this guy does with, you know, maybe 6 or 7 carries, and maybe, you know, 3 targets or 4 targets, you know, inch him up a little bit. And I know he was out there because I saw him running off the field at one point, but he didn't have a carry. He didn't really have any impact in this last game. He gives him a C+.
Wrong, Son of Augustifson.
What do you give him?
I'm giving him a B.
Okay.
Well, and this is not his fault. I mean, why aren't they giving him the ball? And we talked off air about this, Bob. It's been the last couple of years where, you know, you want to see a guy and you don't get a chance to see him. Like, they've been reticent to put younger guys out on the field the last couple of years. It seems that way to me. And maybe that's not true. Text it in, 710-710. Maybe I'm just making this up in my head. But the thing I loved, and I know it's just one play, but his instincts on that first carry that he got. This is your first carry in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And his instinct, he couldn't explain it because I asked him about it. He's like, well, I just saw this and then I ran.
I ran.
Okay, good. Yeah, but he's not thinking too much. That's a good thing. But the way he set that up, there's something in the back of his mind that, you know, he saw and has seen before, and he cut back. And, you know, Travis Homer, I know, has been in there a lot because he's a veteran. Everybody loves his blitz pickup. This kid did that in college at Miami. He was really good as far as the stuff that I looked at, because a lot of times these guys come out of running backs, I mean, come out of college, it's like they don't block ever, because if you're a really good back that's going to get drafted, they're giving you the ball, or they're, you know, having you go out and do a pass route. So, but I liked what I saw from him. I want to see him get more opportunities. But again, you know, you look at the Seahawks are much more of a passing team than they are a running team. They've thrown it 169 times and only run it 118 this year.
Yeah, I just assume that they like Homer in there for his pass blocking more than DJ Dallas and his pass blocking. I don't know exactly. No, it looks to me like Dallas is a better running back, but we haven't really seen enough of him. And it seems like we've seen enough of Homer as a running back that you'd like to try somebody else at least, but we're not to that point yet, apparently.
Alton Robinson is next on the list in three games because he wasn't active for the first two. Five tackles, three for a loss, a sack, a quarterback hit, and that's playing under 40% of the snaps. He gives him a B+. Again, I agree with him.
Wrong, son of a Gustafson. No, I'm not going that far off. I'm going to say A-.
Okay. I'm going A-, too, off with him.
Are you? Yeah. I think, you know, especially, and I keep going back to the reverse where he stayed at the level and didn't let the reverse get outside of him. And then we asked him about it, and he said, I should have made the tackle there. I love this kid. Plus, you know, he's been coached up by not only, you know, Cliff Averill, who's our buddy and does a great job, but also, you know, Clint Hurt, and their D-line coach is really good. And I'm loving what we're seeing from him. He doesn't look like a rookie out there.
No, he doesn't. A fifth rounder, and you're getting the contributions from Alton Robinson that you've gotten so far. Makes you wonder why he wasn't active in the first two games, but the future looking really bright for him so far.
And then quickly, Freddie Swain, who's got one catch in every game, has caught 7 of 8 targets for 97 yards and a touchdown. He gives him a B+. I might give him an A-. I know it's splitting hairs, but I didn't expect anything. I was wondering if he was going to make the roster.
Right.
Because they bring in Dorsett. There was so much steam behind Ursua. Josh Gordon gets re-signed. I'm thinking, all right, Swain might be the odd man out here.
Well, and then there's that Stephen Sullivan, or maybe I'm saying.
Yeah, he gets incomplete because.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, they thought, well, that guy looked really good. But, yeah, I'm with you. I'm A- on Freddie Swain. I just think he's been great. Add one catch of a play that was nullified because of a penalty that he could have had. So, yeah, I just thought that crossing route he ran and the touchdown that he scored, he looked like a pro out there.
All right.
Good stuff by Son of Augustus.
Yeah, I thought he did a nice job on that. And you guys can read it. He's got write-ups on all of those players, 710sports.com. Coming up, we'll talk to the professor. If you guys have questions for John Clayton, you can text those in right now to 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. Our conversation next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.